The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Jim Cronin from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I shall be reading to you from the Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. All right, let's start off with the cover story for this month of March-April, since we are in April. And the title is Long Gone, L-A-W-N, Gone. Everyone loves their yard except Mother Nature. Lawns, they're part of American life. You throw a football on them, you picnic on them, you lounge and loaf on them. In a blog post titled The Anti-Lawn Movement Bugs Me a Little, landscaper Dave Marchinac reminds us that nothing holds up to foot traffic as hard use like turf grass. Lawns also provide visual relief, a place for the eye to rest while it digests all the botanical awesomeness around it. Sounds great, but the chemical-fed, water-gulping lawn is a seedier side, one that's not as nature-friendly as we might hope from all that green. Even as our planet accelerates and revolts against us, we tend our lawns, one part of the earth we can control. Society falters, resources dwindle, and still, there's lawns. Lawns, burned out, blonde, and dead in the air fire of August. Lawns, emerald green, no, alien green, and kept that wide by a maniacal vigilance and an elaborate systems of pipes and potions, organic and otherwise, in defiance of ecology. And for what? To have in this chaos dominion over something, lawn and order? To drape a veil of verdancy over a world gone to seed? To feel equal or superior to Ron across the street, whose lawn always looks like it's this 18th at Pebble Beach? We've been sweeping our anxieties under these green comfort blankets for quite some time. A smooth, closely shaven surface of grass is by far the most essential element of beauty on the grounds of a suburban home, Frank J. Scott wrote in 1870, around the time the first lawnmower patented, in a book titled The Art of Beautifying Suburban Home Grounds of Small Extent, Chapter 13, The Lawn. For setting off, both the house and the landscape, planting a good lawn is of vital importance, declared the caption in the New York Times of 1937. Around that time, during the Great Depression, the Mattai family in Cincinnati did not have a lawn. They had a yard, and the yard was functional. It was for the chickens and the tomato plants. It was not for grass. One of the Mattais, Vic, used the GI Bill to get graduate school and become a research scientist. He made a family of his own in Philadelphia suburb of Cinemedicine, New Jersey, and in a subdivision that paved over Quaker farmland to accommodate Americans who were tinkering with the Aegis radar system for the nearby RCA Corp. Everyone in the subdivision had a lawn, of course. What was with the American dream in the 20th century if it wasn't aproned by a quarter acre of Kentucky bluegrass, which is good for recreation and admiration and not much else? Vic had some totem vegetable plants on the property, but the yard was not for survival. The yard was for lawn, and the lawn was for mowing. He was mowing the lawn every Saturday, says Vic's daughter, Eddie Marie Mattai, and that was success, having the lawn, mowing the lawn. It is now half a century later. Mattai, a landscape designer, is standing on a lawn in a leafy crook of Bethesda, Maryland. She is talking to the owner of the lawn about getting rid of it. It contributes nothing, homeowner M.J. Ververica says about her lawn, which she's watered and weeded and mowed and toiled over for 31 years. And for what? The lawn is static, non-functional, tedious. Last year, Ververica filled her backyard pool, removed the surrounding lawn, and enlisted Mattai's company to turn the place into an oasis of native plants. A homegrown national park, in the words of a grassroots movement for regenerating biodiversity. Ververica so loves the backyard, which is now an evolving work of horticultural art. Oops, excuse me. Page didn't turn very well there. My apologies. And a functioning component of the surrounding ecosystem, that she wants to do the same thing with her front yard. Mattai used to spend more time educating clients about the benefits of turf removal and native plantings. In the past 2 years, for whatever reason, new clients have started coming to her with those very ideas. Maybe in this climate-conscious era, we are thinking outside the strict geometry of the lawn, which Mattai describes as ecologically dead, a monoculture in the world that needs biodiversity. Over a century, from around the 1870s to the 1970s, Americans slowly fell in love with lawns. The lawns were a sign of taste, calm, power, privilege, order, and discipline, especially in the aftermath of World War II. On the American front lawn, men used power machinery and chemicals and tools of war to engage in battle for supremacy with Mother Nature. Writes Virginia Scott Jenkins in her book, The Lawn, A History of an American Obsession. Over the past 50 years, we've slowly fallen out of love with lawns. They begin to signal waste, disregard disharmony, homogeneity, gentrification, zombie boomerism. Wasn't there something a bit decadent about millions of Americans applying millions of pounds of fertilizer and pouring millions of gallons of water on the ground to grow something you couldn't eat unless you were a Jersey cow? Columnist Edmund Goodman wrote in the Boston Globe way back in 1977. I think we're growing as a country, Mattai said. For a lot of American history, it seemed like we had boundless access to land, and we kept extracting from it and building on it. I see real change from looking at land as a demonstration of power or success to looking at land as a precious resource. She adds, when are we lawn people, we are one thing. When we are not lawn people, we are another thing. We are still largely lawn people. The biggest irrigated crop by far in the United States, not corn or soybeans, but lawn. Unproductive, ornamental lawn. Around 40 million acres of it, or 2% of the land area of the lower 48, according to multiple estimates cited by Garrett Gutman, program manager of NASA's Land Cover Land Use Change Program. 40 million acres. The entire state of Georgia couldn't contain America's total lawnage. And we pour 9 billion gallons of water on landscaping every day, according to the Environmental Protection Agency. Meanwhile, the southwestern United States is enduring a mega drought. The past two decades constitute its driest period since the year 800. In world history, for water, lawns are a sneaky siphon. These days, we now have No Mow May Day, a movement to let grass grow uncut for the month of May, creating habitat for forage for early season pollinators, and where neighbors test each other's tolerance for nonconformity. We have Twitter users sharing before and after photos of their war on lawns, which turn flat slabs of sickly green into colorful kingdoms of billowing flora. We have a channel on Reddit called No Lawns and TikTok hashtags such as anti-lawn, which might direct you to a performance of a profane anti-lawn song by 27-year-old Nashville musician named Mel Bryant. At the time, all of my neighbors were obsessed with their lawns, says Bryant, who wrote the song on Earth Day 2020. Everyone was mowing constantly every day. At any point in time, you'd hear a lawnmower going, and it drove me freaking insane. I still have this one neighbor who, I swear, on the 4th of July was mowing at 7:30 p.m. What are you doing, dude? This can wait. Bryant's song racked up tens of thousands of views, spreading through TikTok's cottagecore hashtag, where younger people advertise their cozy, quaint, sustainable back-to-nature ethos. I do think it's pretty generational, Bryant says. I've definitely noticed in the past few years that so many people around my age are getting into gardening and taking their lawns and turning them into gardens. Walt Whitman wrote of grass in 1855, I guess must be the flag of my disposition, out of hopeful green stuff woven, said Hank Hill, fictional Texas propane salesman in 1977. Look, some people hoist a flag to show they love our country. Well, my lawn is my flag. But lawn has become a liability, or in some cases an asset in the condition of its removal. California's main water utility is paying customers between $2 and $5 for each square foot of living turf that they remove. Last year, Nevada outlawed certain types of lawn, or rather the state legislature prohibited the use of water from the dribbling Colorado River to feed certain types of non-functional turf, which in southern Nevada slurps up to 12 billion gallons of water every year, more than 10% of the state's usage of the river. The law created a committee to sort functional turf from non-functional. Discussions were had about how to categorize pet relief areas and wedding lawns on golf courses. Before the law passed, Sun City Anthem, an active adult community in Henderson, Nevada, had already moved almost 40,000 square feet of grass, which nearly halved its water bill. Larry Fozon, facilities manager and landscape supervisor, replaced the lawn with xeriscaping, that's X-E-R-I-scaping, native plants like lantana, cactuses, Mexican feathergrass. Last year on the property, Fosan saw something he'd never seen before in Nevada. Monarch butterflies, about 25 of them, migrating through. There's flowers, color, butterflies, hummingbirds, Fawcett says of lawnless living. Different parts of the day you see different things. We have boulders so people can sit and be part of the landscape. When we had grass, people just walked onto the buildings, but now they'll stop and ooh and awe. Landscaping is meant to be interactive. It's meant to be part of your life. Landscaper Marchinac, he of the Why Anti-Lawn Movement Bugs Me a Little, blog post, accepts even welcomes changing landscape taste. He notes, however, that change is slow. As much as Americans like to call themselves rugged individuals, there's a lot of looking around to see what other people are doing, says Marchinac, who lives in suburban Culpeper, Virginia. I explain to people advocating anti-lawn, look, it's not going to happen overnight. If you want to get people away from lawns, we have to show that it can be beautiful, it can be desirable, and perhaps, most importantly, it can make their neighbors jealous. Hang on a second. I need to turn a page here to get a... There's a lot of inserts here. 5 reasons to kick your lawn habit. Every week, Americans mow and maintain an area larger than the size of Florida. All that fussing has consequences. Number one, lawns are thirsty. Watering a lawn for an hour uses more than 1,000 gallons of water. That's up to 9 billion gallons a day across the country and makes turfgrass our country's single largest irrigated crop. This, while more than half of the lower 48 states were in a drought at the end of last summer. Number two, running on fumes. Here's a fun fact. In 2018, gas-powered lawn mowers, leaf blowers, and other garden equipment guzzled almost 3 billion gallons of gas in the United States, roughly the same amount as 6 million passenger cars driven for a year. Number three, cough, cough, wheeze, wheeze. Running a lawnmower for an hour emits the same amount of pollution as driving a car 45 miles. Gas-powered lawn and garden equipment produces up to 5% of our country's air pollution. Number four, non-fertile grounds. Our lawns use 10 times more fertilizer, which releases nitrous oxide, a greenhouse gas, than our agricultural crops. Those fertilizers leach into wetlands, rivers, and oceans, creating algae blooms that deoxygenate water, causing fish to die. Number five, bug off. The 80 million pounds of pesticides and herbicides we add to our lawns each year also disrupt the food chain, killing helpful insects and plants. Nature is not happy out there anymore. In fact, there is no out there. It's gone. Doug Talamon, founder of Homegrown National Park and wildlife ecology professor at the University of Delaware. We're wild about rewilding. Rewilding is the act of restoring an area to its natural state. Here's why you'll want to try it. We're in the money. Homeowners spend billions of dollars on fertilizers every year while watching water bills rise. Replant with native plants. They don't need much of any of the above. Whoa, that's deep. Native grasses and plants have deeper roots, which sequester more carbon dioxide from the atmosphere. The birds and the bees. You'll not only help pollinators and birds, you'll get a captivating nature show every day, like nesting birds and cheery butterflies. To your health. Studies show how nature improves our mental health, making us happier, boosting the immune system, and even lowering blood pressure. Reclaim some time. What would you do with your Saturdays if you didn't have to tend to that aggravating swath of turf? The talk of the town. Sit on your porch and watch neighbors ooh and awe over your front yard filled with a colorful array of wild strawberries, Pennsylvania sedge, and purple love grass. Imagine that. As biodiversity blossoms in our little wildlife refuge, it rebukes the curious kid inside of us. You'll likely end up with a new hobby, too, like birding, photography, or even entomology. Let your imagination go wild. Okay, you got rid of your lawn. Now what? Go native. Swap turf for native shrubs, wildflowers, trees, and grasses. They require little, if any, watering or supplemental nutrients because they thrive in local weather and soil conditions. Insects and tiny creatures will thank you because they prefer to eat and reproduce on these plants. Without them, the tiny creatures starve, as do birds and other animals that feed on them. And birds are hungry. It takes more than 6,000 caterpillars for a pair of chickadees to rear a clutch of young. Try alternative ground cover. Still want a wide open space? Replace grass with wildflowers, clover, daisy-like chamomile, purple thyme, and native grasses like buffalo grass, red fescue, and bentgrass. Try a really alternative ground cover. Rock. Xeriscaping is a fancy word for yard that needs little no water to stay alive. These are popular in desert areas, but it can also be made elsewhere. They often include a mix of drought-tolerant plants like cactuses, agave, bright yellow rabbit bush, plus rocks, gravel, and mulch. And there's a picture here of it. It's really kind of pretty. Think colorfully. Replace one-dimensional turf with layers and textures of visual intrigue. The solution is to create symmetry in landscape. Put tall plants in the back and short plants in the front. Then add other elements like a winding path, a bird bath, and beds under the tree. The Lawn Swapper. Marini Ritchie of Bend, Oregon. I began small, replacing a patch of grass with native butterfly host plants. Today my yard is a complex wildlife refuge bursting with flowers, shrubs, native grasses, and trees, and lots of birds, like white-headed woodpeckers, nuthatches, quails, and goldfinches. I take a lot of pride in how many birds have raised their young here. I recommend putting your best plantings close to the house, where you can see them out the window. I have some really perfumed shrubs like mock orange, with this wonderful orange wild smell. Every time you open the window, I find a lot of healing in the garden. Freddie Arthur in Tacoma, Washington. When we purchased our home, the front yard was a postage stamp of hard-baked surface with no privacy and three or four struggling non-native ornamental shrubs. It was lifeless and depressing. I've since replaced that with over 100 species of native trees, shrubs, and flowers. My force for native plants is for wildlife. They were here first. To not put back what was here, They were here first. To not put back what has been taken is just rude. I can watch juncos and chickadees gathering food and nesting materials, and flocks of bushtits bobbing the plantings during peak traverse times of bugs or seeds. I wanted a space I could enjoy, not be a slave to, for the benefit of wildlife. And my eyes and heart, I feel like an emissary of Mother Earth, and it's good. Ernie Iwashuk, St. Alberta. Ripping up his lawns 30 years ago wasn't normal. I got a lot of attention from neighbors and newspapers, but today I have a creek bed that gathers leaves. It's usually just full of ladybugs in the spring and fall, and there's usually some kind of grassland sparrows nesting in the shrubs. My backyard has been converted into a vegetable garden, which I keep planting for myself and my kids. They're scattered all over the place now, but it keeps them coming home. But I like my lawn. Grass isn't inherently evil. Smaller patches surrounded by wild areas are a good balance, with enough space for both humans and creatures to hang out, and kids and dogs to play on. Here are four tips to making your lawn a little friendlier. 1. Start small. No need to do everything at once. Break changes into stages. First, try a border bed full of wildflowers and shrubs in front of your house. The following year, build a vegetable garden. Step 2. Embrace weeds. Make uninvited wild violets, clover, and other low-growing blooms that help pollinators feel welcome by letting them take over sections of your lawn. Step 3. Stow the lawnmower. No-mow May means exactly that. Don't mow in May, which helps bees and other early-season pollinators find nourishment when food sources are scarce. Hate the idea of not mowing? Then mow less, every 2 or 3 weeks, and stop altogether in the fall. Step 4. Get certified. Certify your nature-friendly lawn as a wildlife habitat with the National Wildlife Federation or become one of Audubon Rockies' habitat heroes. Certification for each comes with a sign of your yard to show off to your neighbors. How to find a four-leaf clover. How appropriate. First, you have to believe that you'll find one and trust that they're there, says Professor Leslie Hurd of Rhode Island School of Design. Look for ruptures and patterns instead of counting leaves. Three leaves appear triangular, four leaves square. Sunlight flattens clovers into a green blob, so look in the shade. Four-leafers are the products of genetics and environment, so if you're unsuccessful in one patch, move to greener patches. Good luck. Nick Offerman's Guide to Nature's Bounty. The Parks and Recreation Star offers handy tips for bartering with Mother Nature. Let's talk about gifts, and I don't mean Christmas. Santa Claus, Samantha Claus, Tooth Fairy, Easter Bunny. I scoff. Blech. What's the sound of me oddly trumping an insolent nether toot in their general direction, because the gifts that keep on giving year-round. Straight-up largesse, talk to Mother Nature. Hers is the bag that holds the bounty, to be harvested from the circle of life itself every day of the year. When you can unplug from the modern consumerist distraction channels and be found pretty much anywhere on the grid 24/7 and immerse yourself in the quietude of a hike, spelunk, dive, or paddle, the riches that become available to you are quite tasty indeed. Let's take the Great Lakes for starters. You could hike through unlimited acres of near-virgin conifer forest, lousy with squirrels, raccoons, you name it, skunks, cute as hell. You'll emerge along the shores of Lake Superior, where you'll be able to employ your large, strong hands in the harvesting of willow fronds, enough for a good-sized creel or fish basket. Please note that these fronds cost $0. When gathering your willow, select at least three contrasting autumn colors so your basket won't feel out of place on the cover of Sunset magazine. Take your time and weave the hell out of that creel, adding the final flourish of a hand-tooled leather strap to serve as a hasp. Next, take that creel to the nearest big town and find a local butcher or meat counter at a grocery and cannily barter your weaving project for a literally pounds of smoked bacon. Boom. Mother Nature just paid you, and with a gift of pork. Or this. Head down to Hexus Hill Country during the rainy season and go entirely bonkers harvesting morel, chanterelle, and chicken-of-the-woods mushrooms. These savory treats are highly prized, but remember that you are technically not allowed to forage for fungi on public or private land unless you have permission. Some national parks and preserves allow each citizen to collect an amount for personal use, usually less than a gallon. But beware. If they catch you selling your treasures, you will find yourselves in deep odor, an excellent place to grow mushrooms, by the way. You can bypass this pitfall by purchasing a $50 commercial permit, if you're a sucker, that is. But guess who has a better idea? That's me. That's right. That's me. When your chosen area has received an inch or two of steady rain over a few days, head into the live oaks by spotting the brightly fruiting mushrooms. To be sure you avoid any poisonous varieties, try reading a book for once. When you have amassed a few dry gallons of alien-looking shrooms, then you are sitting pretty, because these wooded woodland treats are absolute delicacies to idiots who like to eat dirty mold and fungus. Head into town and find some. These e-marks are known to congregate at embarrassingly boogie eateries. These restaurants are simple to find because they refer to themselves as eateries. I usually see if I can sniff out the kind of place that serves snails, pate, or any dish topped with coriander fish foam. Head around to the back door and brandish your haul. It's like a contraband because in Texas it is. These foodies, as they prefer to themselves, will lose their feeble minds at the merest prospect of adding to your forage to their stews. And here's a good part. For your troubles, you can get them to swap you, thus bypassing the illegal selling. For young Berkshire hogs, or in a pinch, you can accept Chester Whites, which you can then drive or haul to your homestead. Allow them to root out their own supply of acorns and wild grubs, and they will fatten into dozens of savory, delicious meals. My final example involves another of nature's wonderful gifts, that of time spent with my family. It's almost perfectly natural, except that my cousin Margie likes to wear synthetic fabrics, which are made from crude oil. This is not only the way in which she's a nincompoop. We love nothing more than to go fishing together in Minnesota every summer and catch up to our legal limit in all the available fish species, in ascending order of size: perch, bluegill, crappie, smallmouth bass, largemouth bass, walleye, northern pike, muskie. We do catch and release. We catch the fish and then release them into the fish basket. I actually don't know the legal limits. I just said that in case any lawyers read this. We basically fill up Grandpa Mike's two big coolers with as many frozen specimens of the above species as we can fit and take them into Motley, to Maury's Seafood Markets. Out back, we meet this lady named Eloise, who runs a barbecue truck, and tree just four racks of pork ribs per cooler, which is a pretty astonishingly good deal if you have tasted her ribs. These are but a few of the many ways you, utilizing your human ingenuity, can glean the most precious gifts that Mother Nature can offer, which are also known as pork products. Next time somebody brings up the topic of exchanging presents and you have been afforded this priceless life hack with which to vanquish any and all friends, relatives, and acquaintances. And so, on behalf of myself and everyone here at the Jest, allow me to say, you're welcome. Nick Offerman is an actor, outdoorsman, and author. His latest book, Where the Deer and the Antelope Play, is available now. He is also the audiobook narrator of The Need to Be Whole by Wendell Berry. 5 very literal translations. Paper vampire, translation, paper vampire, what we call it, stapler. Bergmál, Icelandic, translation, rock language, what we call it, echo. Schlossgeug, German, translation, hit stuff, what we call it, drums. Gavisti, Sanskrit, translation, desire for cattle, what we call it, war. Nuzaiku, Mandarin, translation, cowboy pants, what we call it, jeans. All in a day's work. A relative of mine, a minister, once performed a wedding ceremony in a car. The pair were too old and frail to get out, so he got on his knees in the front seat and turned them to them in the back. After declaring them husband and wife, he told the groom, "At this time, it's customary to kiss the bride." The weary groom responded, "Okay, go ahead." I'm an EMT. I once responded to a man complaining of an insect crawling into his right ear. But more bothersome was the burning sensation in his left ear. That's when we noticed his wife holding a bottle of insect spray. Turns out she had sprayed insecticide into his left ear, thinking it would flush the insect out of his right ear. I had to explain to her that our ear canals are separated by our brain. I can't be the only person who says, "Please leave me alone," quietly out loud to her email. Remember that time in grad school when my advisor, a great ornithologist, got a random call. Drunk guy. Bar noises in the background. "Is this the bird professor?" My advisor, yeah. Drunk guy. "Do hummingbirds have feet?" My advisor, why, yes. Wild cheering over the phone from the bar. I think we can all agree that hairdressers are the unsung heroes for looking at the pictures of a celebrity hair we want and not laughing in our faces. And with that, we roll over to Consumer Reports. For the Time Trapper, home safety. In 1949, we warned that some table radios are a fire hazard due to exposed metal screws and advised buying a safer model like the old-looking one above. 1959, CR tests furniture paints and warns that those containing lead may be dangerous on children's furniture because toddlers can ingest the paint and suffer lead poisoning. 1966, the first modern home security system invented by nurse Marie Van Britten Brown and her husband Albert Brown, an electronic technician. Both of them, by the way, are African-American. 1977, we test do-it-yourself burglar alarms and find many that cost around $150 work well to deter burglars. But houses with high-value items should get a pro system, $1,000 or more. 1979, Sierra tries out emergency home ladders using to climb down a bedroom window. Only 2 of the 9 brands passed our test. I used to have one of those. For goodness, never had to use it. 1987, we test radon detectors in a house with high levels and recommended activated charcoal radon detectors, which works more quickly than others. In 1992, the Consumer Product Safety Commission rolls out a mandatory garage door safety standard to keep children from becoming trapped under the doors. In 1994, our testers use a heavy metal pendulum to stimulate kicking in a door test, the strength of 30 door locks. A quick set for $30, Baldwin Prestige for $40, and Falcon for $50 held up best in our tests. In 2012, CR says that indoor air quality is a health concern in many homes. We test 25 air purifiers, and the $300 Whirlpool above is our top pick. There's a picture of it. 2023, Arlo Smart Security Cameras top our ratings. 21% of the surveyed Americans own this type of product, a 2022 Global Consumer Survey finds. And there's a picture of the Arlo Essential Wireless Security VMC 2030, $130. Luxury SUVs, the better deal. A Lexus NX, $47,765, between $38,605 and $57,805. The one they're showing is $47,765. And then there's the Mazda CX-5, from $26,700 to $39,650, and the one they're showing is $38,125, which is pretty. I love the paint job on those cars. The Lexus NX is a pleasant all-around luxury SUV, but the Mazda CX-5 is equally functionality. What's more, our testers found the Mazda more engaging to drive with nimble handling and a comfortable ride. The available up-level 2.5 turbo version has lively acceleration, a leather swath interior, a Bose stereo, quality knobs, and heated seats. Yet it comes in about $10,000 less than the NX 350 version. Oh, I like this next article. Product Spotlight, our favorite Trader Joe's snacks, because after I leave here, I'm going to go buy Trader Joe's. Supermarkets are packed with tempting snacks, but which will hit the spot when you're hungry? Our editors browse the aisles of Trader Joe's recently to find the tastiest and also healthiest bites offered there. Our most liked finds are all under 200 calories per serving, and some, like almonds, chips, and puffs, are also low in sodium. Low-sodium tortilla chips. Quinoa and black bean-infused tortilla chips, $3.29 for 12-ounce package. These chips have 3 grams of fiber and just 40 milligrams of sodium per serving. Not a lot compared with traditional tortilla chips, which can have 100 milligrams per serving. Enjoy 8 chips, 140 calories, with your favorite salsa, which should add only 5 to 10 calories per tablespoon. Puff Pieces. World's puffiest white cheddar corn puffs, $2.49 for 7 ounces. Supermarket snack aisles are filled with cheese-flavored snacks, but we like these, not because they claim to be the world's puffiest, although they are light and airy, but because they have good flavor and a generous 53-puff serving size for just 140 calories and 100 milligrams of sodium. High-protein pick-me-up, Thai lime and chill almonds, $5.79 for 12 ounces. Nuts are a smart afternoon snack because they're rich in protein, so you'll feel satisfied longer. Almonds in particular are high in fiber and offer calcium and vitamin E too. 1/4 cup of these spicy almonds, 190 calories, has 8 grams of protein, 3 grams of fiber, and just 20 grams of sodium. A tasty twist on pretzels. Almond butter-filled pretzel nuggets, $4.49 for 12 ounces. Okay, pretzel nuggets aren't exactly a health food, but these are delicious. When you bite in, you get a hit of sweet almond butter, and then as you chew, it mixes salty and sweet. Crunchy and smooth, says CR staffer Alitha Ching Ching Cook. Because they're less healthy, stick to just 8 nuggets, 140 calories. Dairy-free dip, vegan tzatziki dip, $4.29 for 8 ounces. Many tzatzikis are made with cow's milk yogurt, but this one contains vegan cream cheese instead to make it creamy and dairy-free, although it doesn't give you any protein. Enjoy a few tablespoons, 4 for 100 calories, with baby carrots, which have carotenoids, antioxidants that are important for eye health. Sweet and Country Crackers. Trader Joe's Fig and Olive Crisps, $3.99 for 5.3 ounces. Prefer a sweeter snack? These little crisps, with hints of fig and Kalamata olives, don't even need a dip. Our editors ate them right out of the box. Have 11 of these petite crackers for just 90 calories. But be mindful of your sugar intake. They have 4 grams of added sugars per serving. Well, I know where I'm spending some money after I leave here. Trader Joe's, here I come. Product Spotlight. Showerheads with great pressure. If you've ever struggled to get clean under a low-flow showerhead, we feel your pain. Per federal standards, all showerheads can exceed a flow rate of 2.5 gallons per minute, which save waters but sometimes means a less satisfying spray. In our recent tests, however, we found several CR-recommended models that still provide a robust hot shower. Some conserve even more water than the federal standard. CR staffers assess the overall feel of the spray as well as the heat of the water as it falls. The first one they listed was the Ho Pro Pro High Pressure Fixed Showerhead, 5 settings. It's a multi-setting at $18. It scored an 85. It had a 5.5 in the shower feel, a 4-for-5 of hot water temperature, and a 5-for-5 for water conservation. The second, which was scored an 82, was the American Standard Spectra 4-Touch Function Showerhead at a multi-setting at $113 and a 5.5 in the shower floor. It had the same rating as the previous one, but a heck of a lot more expensive. Moen Engage Magnetic 6-Function Handheld Showerhead scored an 81. Top shower feel, top hot water temperature, and okay water conservation. And that was $73. The Kohler Forte 1.75 multi-setting at $88. By the way, the previous Moen was a reverberable nozzle, and this one is a fixed setting. Sort of 77, it had a 4 out of 5 on the shower feel, a 5.55 on a hot water temperature, and a 4.5 on a water conservation. Then there was the Oxygenics PowerWave 6 Spray Handheld Shower for $40. And that got 4 out of 5 on all but the water conservation, where it got 5 out of 5, and that was $40. The Kohler Moxie Showerhead, which is kind of a weird-looking thing here, has a single setting, and it got $70. And it got a 4 out of 5 on the shower fill, but 5 out of 5 on the hot water and the water conservation. And then there's the Waterpik 6 Spray 4.5 shower head. Priced at $55. It also got the same 4 out of 5 on the shower fill and 5 out of 5 on the water temperature and water conservation. Then there's the HoProPro 6-function handheld shower head for $31. Boy, these two are, HoProPro is cheap. Scored a 74. It got a 4 out of 5 on all the shower fill, hot water temperature, and water conservation. The Delta Faucet 5 Spray, Intuition 2-in-1 Shower, multi-setting, at $115. Got a 4 out of 5 on the shower fill and the hot water temperature, and a 5 out of 5 on water conservation. High Sierra Classic Plus Flow Shower Head, single setting, $40. 4 out of 5 shower fill, lousy 3 out of 5 hot water temperature, and 5 out of 5 on water conservation. And finally, the Spark Pod High Pressure Rain Shower Head has a single setting at $30. Only scored a 60. It only got a 3 out of 5 on the hot water temperature and the shower fill, but it did get a 5 out of 5 on the water conservation. Then we have a list of recalls. Ram pickup trucks. Chrysler is recalling 1,234,600 2019, 2022 Ram 1500, 2500, and 3500 pickup trucks because the tailgate may not latch properly due to misaligned tailgate strikers, which result in a tailgate opening while driving. What to do? Dealers will inspect the tailgate and adjust it if necessary free of charge. The Laundress Cleaning Projects. The Laundress is recalling about 8 million laundry and household cleaning products because they contain various bacteria, including Burkholding kappa-cea complex, Klebsiella aeruginosa, and multiple different species of Pseudomonas. People with weakened immune systems, external medical devices, and underlying lung conditions who are exposed to the bacteria face a risk of serious infection that may require medical treatment. The products are sold on Amazon, thelaundress.com, and other websites, and in stores including the Container Store, The Laundress, Nordstrom, Target, and other major retailers throughout September 2022 for $8 to $100. What to do? Stop using the products. For details on how to request a refund, call The Laundress at 800-681-1915 or go to thelaundressrecall.com. You may need to take a photo of the lot code on the product. After you've requested your refund, dispose of the product by closing the bottle tightly and place it in household trash. Do not empty the product prior to disposal. Scotch Thermal Laminators. 3N is recalling about 516,000 Scotch TL1302 thermal laminators because a safety feature can malfunction if the laminator overheats, proposing a fire hazard. The laminators are sold at Costco, Staples, Walmart, and other stores nationwide, and online at Amazon, Staples.com, and Walmart.com from April 2014 to October 2022 for $35 to $90. What to do? You need to unplug it and stop using the laminator. Call 3M at 800-772-4337 or go to scotchbrand.com for details, disposal instructions, and how to get a full refund. Cuisinart Compact Blenders. Conair is recalling about 66,000 Cuisinart Compact Blender and Juice Extractor Combos, model CBJ450. Because the nut holding the blender blades assemblies can loosen and detach from the base when in use, posing a laceration hazard if a consumer comes in contact with a loose blade. The blenders were sold at Crate and Barrel and other department gourmet and specialty stores nationwide and online at Amazon, Kohl's.com, Macy's.com, and other online retailers from November 2021 through August 2022 for about $80. What to do? Immediately stop using the blender part of the combo. Call Cuisinart at 877-339-2534 or go to Cuisinart.com for details on how to get a free replacement blade assembly. The juice extractor may continue to be used. Battery packs for cordless window shades. Ningbo Duya Mechanic and Electronics is recalling about 56,000 cordless window shades battery packs because they can overheat and pose a fire hazard. The battery packs were sold at Budget Blinds, the Shade Store, and other window treatment stores, and online at blinds.com from March 2021 through March 2022 for $100 to $400. What to do? Stop using the battery pack. Call Ningbo Duya at 888-943-2391 or go to battery-recall.com to obtain a free replacement battery pack. Consumers will be provided with free return shipping boxes for the recalled batteries. Bentax Children's Clothing. Ben Texas recalling about 87,000 children's clothing sets because the textile link painted on them poses a lead poisoning hazard. The sets were sold at Army and Air Force Exchange Services, Burlington, DD, Ross, TJ Maxx, and other stores nationwide, and online from Amazon from November 2021 through August 2022 for $5 to $25. Stop using the clothing. Call Bentex at 800-451-0285 or go to bentex.com/recall for details on how to return or dispose of the clothing and receive a full refund. March is the best time to buy. Well, we're out of March, so this doesn't count. Product update. The secrets to cleaner, healthier teeth. Hear what matters when it comes to choosing the right brush, manual or electric, a hard-working toothpaste, and the best possible brushing technique. The advice from dental experts for keeping your teeth clean sounds simple enough. Brush twice a day and floss. But choosing among the many products available to help you do this can be daunting. Electric toothbrush or manual? Soft or hard bristles? String floss or water flosser? And what about mouthwash, dental cleanings, and whitening strips? The right answer depends on your preferences. Hopefully, what you experience with any toothbrush is you're getting your teeth clean, and then you're going to want to use it again, says Edward Hewlett, DDS, a professor at the UCLA School of Dentistry in Los Angeles and a consumer advisor to the American Dental Association. There are tooth care products with clear advantages, Consumer Reports tests show, for example, that some electric toothbrushes are better than others at cleaning and are easier to use. Here we explain which dental hygiene strategies work best and what to consider when picking a product. Are electric toothbrushes better for your teeth? Most evidence suggests that they are, at least a little. But the real-life significance of that research, which is often funded by companies that make electric toothbrushes, may not mean much for your overall oral health. A 2014 analysis of previously published studies of Cochrane, an independent panel of experts, found that over several months, powered brushes received 21% more plaque and reduced gum inflammation by 11% more compared with manual brushes. Two more recent studies by scientists who had funding from companies that make toothbrushes found similar results, including a 2019 study in the Journal of Clinical Periodontology that followed more than 2,800 people for 11 years. But that doesn't mean everyone should switch to an electric toothbrush, experts say. It's unclear, for example, what impact an 11% reduction in gum inflammation after 3 months would have on your lifelong oral health or overall risk of gum disease. In fact, even the 2019 study that favored electric brushes didn't find a difference in the number of cavities between electric and manual toothbrush users. Ultimately, your technique may be better more than whether you use a manual or electric brush. Both type of brushes can be completely effective in plaque removal and in helping prevent gum disease, says Olivia Sheraton, DMD, a professor of clinical restorative dentistry at the University of Pennsylvania. Still, electric brushes might be better for some people, Sheraton says, because they can be easier to use for those who lack manual dexterity or have braces or permanent retainers, or for those who care for someone who needs help brushing their teeth. Question, what kind of bristles are ideal? A, although you'll find manual toothbrushes with bristles ranging from extra soft to hard, medium or hard bristle brushes are best reserved for tasks like cleaning the grout in your kitchen or bathroom tile. That's funny. For your teeth, dental experts say you should use a soft or extra soft bristle brush. That's because harder bristles can injure your delicate gum tissue. They could also potentially damage your teeth, says Clinton Carey, Ph.D., a professor at the University of Colorado School of Dental Medicine on Schuch Medical Campus. When gums recede, which they happen naturally as we age, they often leave less protective surfaces of your roots exposed. Those sensitive areas can be damaged if you use harder bristles or brush too physically. Are rotating or sonic electric toothbrushes better? Both kinds can do a great job of cleaning your teeth. Rotating toothbrushes have a round head that rotates or oscillates. Sonic brushes have a more typical elongated head, sharply resembled a manual brush with bristles that move side to side so quickly they produce an audible hum. Some researchers suggest that rotating toothbrushes may have a slight edge over sonic types, but again, much of this research could be biased by manufacturer funding. And even if rotating brushes do work slightly better in scientific studies, the differences may not be notable to consumers. A 2021 analysis in the Journal of American Dental Association, assigned to assess real-world effectiveness, concluded there wasn't enough evidence to pick a winner. CR's testing concurs. We found models of both types that performed well. Although our top-rated toothbrush is a rotating model, four of our six recommended electric toothbrushes are the Sonic type. If you're not sure which type of electric brush you like, check to make sure that you can return it if you decide it's not right for you. Oral-B and Philips Sonicare offer 60 and 90-day money-back samples, guarantees, for example. Electric toothbrush features to look for. Cleaning ability is the key, and its most significant factor in CR's electric toothbrush scores. In our tests, we asked volunteers to skip any dental hygiene for 8 hours and to use one of the electric toothbrushes for 2 minutes. A dental hygienist measures plaque levels in the mouth before and after brushing to rate how well the brush cleans. Along with strong cleaning ability, you should seek out brushes with features such as a 2-minute timer and a pressure sensor. The American Dental Association says that most people brush their teeth for less than a minute, so a built-in timer can help. Olivia Sharon, DM&D, also recommended looking for brushes that pause when it's time to move from one section of your mouth to the next. A pressure sensor can warn you if you're pressing too hard with your brush, which can damage gums and enamel. And what about brushes with multiple cleaning modes? Edmund R. Hewitt, DDS, says they probably don't make much of a difference in your oral health. Which toothpaste should I use? Any toothpaste that has fluoride should do the trick. That's the most important ingredient because it prevents cavities and helps you avoid tooth decay by strengthening the enamel. Fluoride is so important that the ADE doesn't provide its seal of acceptance to fluoride-free toothpastes. There are other ingredients in some toothpastes that you may want to stay away from. For example, research has found that people who frequently get canker scores may get fewer ones when they avoid toothpastes that contain sodium lauryl sulfate. Various toothpaste ingredients fall in and out of fashion. We have to be very careful of those fads, says Don Smith, chair of the Department of Dental Hygiene at Howard University in Washington, D.C. That's because it can take a while for researchers to discern whether a particular ingredient is safe and effective. One newer trend has little evidence to support it. Activated charcoal toothpaste, which are often marketed as whiteners, but some could actually cause damage, according to a 2019 paper from the British Dental Association. Charcoal can be abrasive, which can wear down your enamel, damage your gums, and lead to tooth sensitivity. And many charcoal toothpastes don't contain fluoride. Older toothpastes designed to whiten teeth, sometimes called smoker's toothpaste, have sparked similar concerns. But Kenneth Markowitz, DDS, an associate professor at the Rutgers School of Dental Medicine in Newark, New Jersey, says that most mainstream products on the market today aren't as abrasive as some whitening toothpastes once were. Of course, that means modern whitening toothpastes may provide minimal actual, well, whitening. The right way to brush your teeth. Brush twice a day for 2 full minutes. If your brush doesn't have a timer, set one on your phone. Brush the front and back of your teeth. Be sure to brush the tops, the chewing surfaces too, says Don Smith, chair of the Department of Dental Hygiene at Howard University. Use a light touch. Brush with gentle pressure, says the American Dental Association. Using too much force can damage your teeth and gums over time, leading to sensitivity. Angle the brush, whether manual or electric, at about 45 degrees at the gum line, which helps you get crevices to remove plaque. Brush in small circles, small gentle strokes back and forth. For using an electric toothbrush, don't keep it in one spot for a long time. Move it all around your mouth. Do I really need to floss? Yes, you may have rejoiced over headlines a few years back that claimed there's not much evidence supporting flossing. And in 2019, even the Cochrane panel characterized the evidence showing that flossing helps reduce gum disease as low certainty with inconsistent results. But don't toss out your dental floss yet. Although evidence may not be especially rigorous, regular flossing is supported by basic biology, experts say. The reason you need to brush your teeth twice a day is that very quickly after you finish brushing, bacteria begins to collect on them. UCLA's Hewlett says, if this develops undisturbed, it can cause tooth decay. When you brush, you scrape away bacteria and clear away the food and drink residue they thrive on. But brushing can't reach every bit of a tooth surface. That's where flossing comes in. When done correctly, flossing removes bacteria in parts of your mouth that brushing can't get to. Good flossing techniques are generally involves gently rubbing the floss strand in a C shape against both sides of each tooth and at the gum line. Should I use mouthwash? It's fine to use mouthwash, but it's not strictly necessary. When rinsing your mouth, while rinsing with a mouthwash can decrease the amount of bacteria in the mouth, it can't take the place of brushing and flossing. A lot of people, they want to skip the big stuff, says Smith. Certain types of mouthwash can help with specific conditions. For example, prescription rinses with chlorhexidine and antimicrobial can help people who have periodontal disease or at high risk of tooth decay. If you live in an area where your water isn't fluoridated, or you don't drink tap water, you may want to consider adding a fluoridated mouth rinse to your family's dental care routine. That's especially true if you have kids, and it's something that can be helpful even if there's fluoride in your toothpaste. Are tooth whiteners worth trying? Some of the stains on the outside of your teeth can be removed during a typical dental cleaning, but you might wonder about bleaching your teeth, either at your dentist's office or by using an at-home kit. The active ingredient in most tooth bleaching products isn't the household bleach you use in laundry, but hydrogen peroxide or a related compound. At-home bleaching, which can involve products like bleaching strips or gels and trays, can be effective. But it generally takes longer to see results with those treatments than with professional whitening because in-office treatments are done with higher concentrations of peroxide. Still, it's best to avoid trying to whiten your teeth quickly ahead of a big event like a wedding, for example, he says. That's because the higher concentration of bleaching agents used, whether at home or professionally administered, is more likely you are to experience a main side effect of whitening, gum irritation or tooth sensitivity, which often involves a tingly feeling of pain. High concentrations could even damage teeth. Instead, bleaching is best done over time. If using low concentrations of bleaching agents, Carey, the University of Colorado professor, recommends that people who bleach at home read the product's direction and follow them exactly. In theory, whitening can last for up to a year, but it depends on your habits. Red wine, tea, coffee, and cigarette smoke are all potent stainers of teeth. And how often do I need teeth cleanings? You probably heard you should get cleanings every 6 months. But a 2020 Cochrane review found that adults who timed their visit based on their risk factors, which you can discuss with your dentist, did no worse than people who followed the six-month rule. The American Dental Association says tailoring your visits to your individual health risk is a good one. If you're not at high risk for cavities, your teeth are otherwise healthy, and you don't eat a lot of sweets, for example, seeing a dentist once a year may be sufficient for you, Carey says. On the other hand, people at higher risk may need to go in more often. If you struggle with a dry mouth, for instance, a common occurrence for people who are taking multiple medications, Carey says you may need to see your dentist more frequently because saliva is one of the biggest protectors of teeth. Is a water flosser better than a string floss? Water flosses, commonly known by the brand name Waterpik, although other brands make them too, produces a pulsing, high-pressure jet of water to blast away food debris and plaque from teeth. It's generally touted as an alternative to string floss. But several experts we spoke to said that while water flossers can help, they probably won't do quite as thorough a job as old-fashioned flossing. Still, they can be a good option for people who have difficulty flossing well due to dexterity limitations, dental implants, or orthodontia. Some people who find water flossing more enjoyable, and it's a great option if it helps you get rid of a regular habit. Well, we really don't have enough time to start the next article, Consumer Reports, so I'm going to go back to some Reader's Digest stuff, and we'll do a partial on this. We'll finish it up much later. The strangest roadside attraction in every state. As you travel our great country, you see some of its most beautiful sights. Don't miss these offbeat attractions you'll find along the sides of the roads just off the interstates around the U.S. Alabama, Bama Hinge. In Alabama's Gulf Coast, you'll find only plenty of beaches, but some unusual attractions as well. Bahama Hinge, one of several oddities at Alberta's Baber Marina, will give you not just reason to go boating, but an opportunity to see Alabama's version of Stonehenge, made out of fiberglass. While you're there, don't miss the Lady in the Lake sculpture and an assortment of dinosaurs in the woods. Sound like a place even the kids will love. Alaska, reliable sheet metal Wizard of Oz statues. Fans of the Wizard of Oz will definitely want to stop at the sheet metal fabricator in Juneau, in which has dedicated its roof to the characters of the classic flick, all made of sheet metal, of course. While they may vary in size, the 10-man store is more than 9 feet tall. The company says they built the statues as a way to draw attention to their business. And there's a picture of them. Boy, they got all of them. Everything from the wizard to the evil witch of the west and the beautiful witch of the east. And in Arizona, it's the golf ball house. And this is really interesting. It's a big, big house. Once a 1970s restaurant and nightclub, this eye-popping sculpture in Yucca is known as the Giant Ping Pong Ball or the Golf Ball House. The 40-foot diameter geodesic dome called Area 66 draws many tourists and passerbys who stop it from the road. Unfortunately, you can't peek inside. I mean, this thing sits up about 10 feet off the ground, and it looks like a big golf course. Boy, I'd sure hate to see the golf club to hit that sucker. In Arkansas, it's the Raven. You can't miss this 12-foot-tall statue of a raven when passing through the town of Ravenden Springs. Made of cement and stucco, the statue's base reads, "The raven was the first bird sent from the ark in search of land, and the raven has a reputation for divine magical powers." This town mascot even appeared in the episode of TV series King of the Hill. California's Salvation Mountain. This Culver site outside Palm Springs, California, is a man-made mountain featuring a cross painted with brightly colored art and messages, including God is love and love is universal. Salvation Mountain has been featured on Ripley's Believe It or Not and on the Discovery Channel, and it really is pretty. There's all kinds of artwork all up and down the side of the mountain, literally painted on the mountain. And then Colorado, it's the UFO Watchtower. In San Luis Valley of Colorado has a reputation as a hot spot for alien activity, with many unidentified flying objects supposedly spotted here. The UFO Watchtower in Hooper has little no light pollution, making it all the easier for you to spot your own UFO or just enjoy a little stargazing. In Connecticut, it's the Essex Steam Train. Catch an old-fashioned steam train chugging along the Valley Railroad in Essex. Essex Station was built in 1892 and is a home base for a 12-mile loop of tracks. You can see the station as well as the steam engine and village coaches working their way through the nearby towns of Deep River and Chester. And Delaware, Our Lady, Queen of Peace Shrine. Check out this 33-foot-tall stainless steel statue of the Virgin Mary in the art gallery of the Holy Spirit Church in Newcastle. The church says Our Lady, Queen of Peace statue, which was designed and sculpted by Charles Parks, and built to remind us of Mary's love for all her children and to offer us hope for peace throughout the world. The statue is visible to those traveling along the Delaware Memorial Bridge and Interstate 95. That's interesting. I don't ever remember seeing it, and I've driven that road many times. And last, Florida's largest seashell factory. Known as the shelling capital of the world, it's only fitting that Fort Myers would be home to the Shell Factory, which claims to be the largest seashell retailer in the world. In addition to shells, visitors will find the largest taxidermy collection in North America and change its displays like the year-round Christmas house. There's also a restaurant, trampoline, zip lines, and bumper boats on the 18-acre property. In Georgia, it's the Georgia Guidestones. Located 7 miles north of the city of Elberton on Highway 77, these 19-foot-tall granite stones proclaim a message about the conservation of mankind in a dozen different languages. No one knows who built the Georgia Guildstones, which are known also as America's Stonehenge. And with that, we've just about run out of time for today's episode of Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. Be sure to listen in next time. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. I'm Jim Cronin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. So long until next time, and thanks so much for listening.